providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are now shifting our focus again to the energy sector, as we have started covering the energy sector a lot more last year. Because of how well a lot of the stocks have done, actually, a lot of the stocks have held on to at least some of their gains from last year, as well as, well, the oil price was on just a complete run, as well as the natural gas price. We are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Now, Dan, I have to ask you, just early on in this year, the first day of trading, January 3rd, the biggest mover on my screen is natural gas. Natural gas down 10%. That's a big move to kick off the year. Really, it's a big move any day for natural gas, especially when, again, it had done well in the first half of the year, turned around in the second half of the year, but seems to be getting off on the wrong foot to this year. What do you take away from this initial drop in natural gas early in the year?
Well, the thing to remember, U.S. natural gas is definitely weather-related. If you look at the gas price forecast last year, the lowest price of the year was the first quarter. And then we spiked to like $9, $10 in the second and third quarter when demand was actually at a low point for natural gas. So what led to those peaks last summer were the fear that we would not refill storage in time for winter. And we were running like 300 BCF below the five-year average. But, you know, the thing to remember is gas doesn't go to storage just because it has nowhere else to go. It goes there because utilities are buying it. They're buying physical delivery of gas, and they're sending it to storage. And that's why storage filled up in the fourth quarter, which it tends to do kind of every year as you get closer to the winter. So then we have this incredible cold wave up to the Christmas weekend, and then that backs off, which is also very, you know, I call it the spring back or whatever. So that low that caused those record cold period, it rotated up through the Great Lakes and went up into Canada. And then following that, we had a surge of warm air coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, I live in Houston and it was 80 degrees yesterday and very humid also. So it seems very spring-like right now. But, you know, my long-range weather guy says that by mid-January, we're going to flip back. And this is a La Nina winter, and La Nina winters have big, big moves in the jet stream up and down. So the cold that's hitting the western United States looks like it's going to drift into the eastern United States by mid-January. And then we'll see. I don't know. You know, predicting the weather is anybody's guess, really.
Well, Dan, just looking at the price where it is today, even after this 10% pull, over 10% pullback today, having it above $4 is still historically a pretty good nat gas price for the companies in the space, because a lot of them had built their models on $2.50 or maybe $3 nat gas. So while it's not the 9 or 10 we saw last year, or even the 6 or 7s, how is $4 nat gas in relation to the companies that are in the sector?
Oh, yeah, it's great. And remember, most of them probably didn't even get realized $4 gas, and they still had great years because they had hedged a lot of their production in the first half of the year. I was looking at Antero Resources. Their realized gas price in the first quarter of last year was $3.60, and it was one of the best quarters in the history of the company. Of course, then second and third quarter were even better, but they used their free cash flow to just pay off a ton of debt. And all these gas companies are in much better shape than they were a year ago. I mean, incredibly better financial shape than they were a year ago. And like you said, historically, $4 U.S. gas price is excellent. They would love to know that they could, you know, lock that in for a long time. If they could hedge at $5, and they should have hedged a lot of their gas at $5 or $6, probably.
So, Dan, how important in your eyes for the energy sector are early on moves in the year? Obviously, dropping 10% in the first day, that's not going to encourage a whole lot of investors to dive in, or maybe it will tell them to come in and buy the dip. How important do you think this first week, but even more importantly, say this first month, the month of January, is to the moves for the rest of the year, at least bringing traders into the sector?
Yeah, when you see, you know, these big moves, like it starts out and then the first hour of trading, you have a big drop off in the price. I'm keeping getting some of our members work on Wall Street. They send me all this stuff, and they say there's a real lack of liquidity in the commodities market, that a lot of these guys trade on margin, and there's a real lack of liquidity. So what they're doing is they tighten up their stop loss orders on their long positions. And I think so one big, you know, sale of, you know, one big fund does a sale early on a Monday, and it triggers all these computer sales. And then it takes, you know, a few hours before it stabilizes and usually comes back in the afternoon. That's kind of the pattern we've been seeing. I personally think that OPEC is in charge of the oil price. We are no longer an exporter of oil-based products very much. And so we don't control the oil price. Europe doesn't control the oil price, no matter what they do. And they're price takers, and OPEC is in charge. And I believe if Brent goes below 80, OPEC will announce a production cut, and they'll support that price. And then I think what will happen, let's say as summer approaches, we get into the second quarter, and summer approaches, demand always picks up in the summer months. It always picks up. And I think OPEC will let the price of Brent drift over $100 a barrel.
Well, Dan, so I guess I was going to ask you about what's the downside and upside target you have for oil. And you laid out there that you think OPEC will be a price maker and everybody else are price takers. But we have heard more and more analysts starting to suggest that WTI could go below 70, get into the 60s. You think that's probably off the table. Where do you think the upside is for the year, or what do you think the general range will be for the year? And is this an area that's sustainable for the oil companies?
I think the trading range is going to be the same trading range we had in 2022. I think 70 will be the base, and I think 120 could be the high. I think we're literally in high volatility in the oil market. We don't know what's going to happen, you know, with Russia. It does appear now that I think what happened, the market got ahead of itself thinking that when Russia invaded Ukraine right away, you know, it spiked to $120 a barrel, but then the Russian oil really didn't come off the market. I think this latest thing with the price caps is going to take 700,000 or 800,000 barrels a day of Russian oil off the market. It's going to take a while for that to, you know, flow through the system and get great. And then at the same time, you got, you know, summer demand picking up. I don't think the OPEC countries really have a lot of upside supply to bring to the market anyway. So we'll see. But I think it's just going to be another year of high volatility. And I think we're in the lower end of the oil price right now.
So Dan, let's dive down into the stocks then, because that's what a lot of our listeners are focused on, is investing in stocks. A lot of small stocks our listeners are interested in, but even some of the big ones have actually been catching my eye, especially after an energy conference in Canada that I went to at the very end of October. Look, recapping last year, as I said, oil did a roundabout move. It started the year off really well, came back to pretty much where it started, but most of the oil stocks still up for the year. What do you take away from that environment? How does it portend to how the stocks will trade this year, do you think?
Well, I think they've held on to that because they're in so much better financial shape. They didn't just pile back in and drill baby drill, you know, and drill up all that money. They use that money to clean up their balance sheets. I follow probably 30 upstream oil and gas companies, and I can tell you across the board, they're in very good shape. Very few of them have any near-term debt problems now. They're using operating cash flow to fund all their drilling program. They don't need to go borrow money. They've kind of broken off their partnership with the bankers, I think, and say, heck with you guys. We'll fund our own growth. And they're doing it. And guys, at $75, $80 oil, they're still generating a hell of a lot of cash flow. And they can do it. So now's a great time. I'll tell you what I like now, you know, if you got some excess cash and you're, you know, wanting to build a position in the energy stocks, I think there's some tremendous companies that pay just outstanding dividends right now, where you can lock in, you know, 8, 9, 10% dividend yield. And these companies also have growth. I just moved. We have a high yield income portfolio, one of our three model portfolios in the newsletter. And I just moved EOG Resources and PDC Energy into it. And both of them, as of where they closed on the last day of trading in 2022, they're paying dividend yields of like 6.5% to 7%. they pay both a base plus a special dividend. And because of their cash flow, I don't see them having to lower it. They also are funding stock buybacks. And I think if money did get tight, what they would do is they would slow down their stock repurchase programs and they would, you know, keep their dividends. Because, you know, once you set a dividend, if you cut it, that really hurts your stock. So they don't like to do that.
Well, Dan, I know that you've mentioned in the past that you were an analyst for Hess and that you would look at all these different companies sometimes as a potential for taking them over. We haven't seen a lot of M&A in the space, although we have had some transactions. There has been some mergers recently. Do you expect that to pick up based on where the multiples are currently?
Yeah, what I've seen is some of our public companies are buying out private drilling programs. And so you don't see those as a public company being bought out, but I think that could pick up a little bit. And actually, the pullback in price actually helps M&A because then the sellers, they can't say, look, you got to buy me out at assuming $100 oil price. Well, no, we're not going to do that. And so when you're at the lower end of the commodity price curve, you tend to see more M&A. But I don't know. I mean, a lot of these companies have more than enough drilling inventory. They don't really need to buy anybody else out. You know, one of the ones that I watch that is doing a lot of transactions is Northern Oil and Gas. It's NOG. They've made like five or six transactions, primarily private deals, but they've more than doubled their production with acquisitions. Now, it's a unique company in that they don't operate any of their own properties, but they do only buy non-operating interest in fields that are operated by well-known, very well-capitalized companies. And a lot of them are in our Sweet 16 growth portfolio.
So, Dan, do you think this is a good market to stick with some of these bigger stocks that have that built-in production portfolio? Or is it better to go into these small ones that are shifting a bit more focus into growth? But again, they are smaller, so they usually have more volatility.
Yeah, they have more commodity price risk. You know, there's two reasons to be in both. I mean, I personally have had my biggest gains in some of the small, you know, companies that almost nobody's heard of. And once they start raising production, it really draws a lot of attention. I still like InPlay Oil, Canadian, it's IPO. I still like Hemisphere. I recently moved Surge Energy into our small cap growth, and they just did an acquisition that's going to add about, I think, 4,000 or 5,000 barrels per day. So they're up to around 25,000 barrels a day. It's not that small of a company anymore. Two little Canadians that I looked at, Rock Resources, ROK, and KEI is another one that I'm probably going to move into our small cap growth portfolio. Yeah, and it's done well. In fact, you know, some of those are the best gains that we had last year, and they've pulled back to good entry points again.
Well, Dan, that's one of the trends we've seen is that a lot of these stocks in the oil and gas space really shot higher last year, but a lot of them did roll over between 30 to 50% over the last portion of the year. Do you think, based on the way you value these companies, they're overvalued, undervalued, and how do you value these? What metrics do you use when you're looking at these companies peer-to-peer?
Well, I value them on a multiple of operating cash flow. And I can tell you, historically, these companies are trading at much lower multiples of operating cash flow than I've ever seen. And they're all free cash flow positive. Our Sweet 16 is trading below 3x operating cash flow. And that's incredible. That would have put them at the very top of our takeover list. Our takeover list at Hess, and this is back in the late 70s, early art in our 90s and early, 2000. I left there in 2002. And my team, we were looking at, you know, small cap public companies for possible take. We ended up doing three takeovers and they were all at like 5x operating cash flow at the time. But because what you're looking for when you take over a company is not just their current production, but also their acreage position. Do they have a lot of really high quality drilling inventory? And that's one thing to look at. So when I call it running room, and it's a good way for a public company, instead of going out and sending out a lot of landmen to buy into the Permian Basin or, you know, Bakken or something, they can buy a small cap that's got a lot of acreage in the area already. know, that it's just a way to, you know, pick up a new core area rather than just sending out a lot of land. And in a lot of these really good oil plays, there's no acreage available anyway. All the good tier one acreage is already leased. So it's kind of the only way you can get into those plays.
What are the best area plays in your eyes then? Break down top three, top five of the area plays that you think investors should at least have some exposure to.
Well, obviously the Permian Basin is the only basin I see with significant production upside, and it has multiple layers of production. You know, it's the stacked pay zones out there that the Wall Street gang really likes. Now, the Permian Basin is like 19 million acres. It's really divided into three areas. It's the Midland Basin to the east and the Delaware Basin to the west. And in the middle is what they call the Central Basin Platform. It's actually geologically, it's where there's a rise. It's pushed up. So the zones are closer to the surface. Now, they're not as prolific. They're not as thick. They're tighter sometime than below. But the good shale plays, probably the best shale plays with the most upside, are in the Delaware Basin, and that's far west Texas and also into southeastern New Mexico. And one company that I really like, and I just promoted it to our Sweet 16, is called Permian Resources. That's a brand new name, but it's Centennial Resources merged with another company, I believe it was called Colgate, private company. And it's formed a pretty good sized company. Their current production is about 145,000 barrels a day. The company's almost got no Wall Street coverage yet. The first full quarter after the merger will be the fourth quarter. And I expect them to put out a reserve report that's going to be pretty darn impressive. And they've got a lot of running room. I mean, hundreds of thousands of high quality acres out there. And it's a top shelf management team also.
Well, Dan, to your point about a lot of these companies having big reserves of land and areas of basins that they could push more drilling and wells into, are there any areas where you're seeing that growth really set up for 2023, or any companies that are really focused on growth?
Yeah, Permian Resources is focused on growth. Another one that I like is Earthstone. I really like Earthstone. They're going to report a big production growth from they've tripled their production from last year at this time. Their fourth quarter production is going to be close to 100,000 barrels a day. Last year at this time, they were like 35,000 barrels a day. They've done it through acquisitions. And with those acquisitions, they acquired a lot of acreage. And I know they're very, very focused on growth, and not only through the drill bit, but I don't think they're done acquiring either. And they're very well funded. They have a big financial partner behind them. And so they should draw more attention. Again, they don't get the Wall Street coverage that they deserve.
So in summary then, Dan, say some of our listeners, one of their friends comes to them and says, look, here's a new energy stock. Man, energy stocks have done well. You should get into this one. What are some of the keys investors need to analyze in their due diligence early on to see if that stock could even make the cut?
Well, the number one thing I think they should look at, first of all, know what the production mix is. You know, they all produce a mix of crude oil, natural gas, and NGLs. And all those markets are different. The natural gas market is almost a pure domestic market. You know, we do have some rising exposure to the global gas market. And then NGLs is a little bit in between. We do export quite a bit of our NGLs. Now, NGLs are propane, butane, ethane, you know, that, and that market has improved significantly as well. The only pure oil company we have is the little Canadian Hemisphere Energy. All of its production is oil. And the only pure gas company we have is Comstock Resources, which we like, which is Jerry Jones. He owns the Dallas Cowboys. And he also owns like 75% of Comstock. So you're investing alongside a Dallas Cowboys owner if you want to do that one. But that's all the closest thing we have to a pure dry gas, natural gas company. All the others have a mix. Now, the other thing I would look at is look real close at the balance sheet. Make sure that they don't have any, you know, near-term debt they have to pay off, or they don't have anything left on their bank credit line. You know, access to capital in this market is in the energy sector is extremely important. This is a very capital intensive market, so you can't grow without access to capital. And then are they able to grow? I mean, if companies are able to grow self-funding their drilling program, And our sweet scene, 100% of those companies are self-funded. They can fund their own growth. And that's why they're in there. That's why they're in that portfolio. And what makes an upstream company really value at any point in time is their reserves. How much recoverable oil and gas do they still have in the ground? And then how much running room do they have with high quality drilling inventory? So that's what you're really looking at. And that's what makes them incredible takeover targets as well.
Okay. Dan, so great having you on the show. Thank you for all these insights into the energy sector. We are going to continue to focus on some energy stocks, bringing on more companies on the show throughout this year. And hey, hopefully, at worst, the energy prices stay kind of where they are and these companies continue to make money with their balance sheets already cleaned up and some pretty good dividend options out there as well. Dan, always great having you on the show. Thank you again for your time and thanks for wrapping up the first weekend edition of the new year. I hope you have a prosperous whole 2023. We'll be chatting throughout the year.
All right. Thanks a lot.